Ur is the city-state that has Nanner as its patron god. Nanner was born on Earth. He's an Anunnaki, giant god. He was born on Earth, and Ur was given to him to be his city. And there, his ziggurat house was built, and there he was. Now, today we call those gigantic pyramids that they lived in, we call them temples. And we'll go through that in a minute. But you can see Ur, by the way, you take your cursor and you put it on top of an artifact, and the slideshow will stop. If the brief description gets in your way, that pops up, then put your cursor on the opposite artifact and let it stop the slideshow while you view the one you want to look at. So the first slideshow there is a little map of Mesopotamia, and you're looking at two rivers. The bottom river is the Euphrates. The upper river is the Tigris. And they flow down into the Persian Gulf. That is what's down at bottom right. So if you come up the Euphrates River, the first city-state really that you run into is Ur. Ur develops so well under Nanner that it becomes the metropolis for the rest of Mesopotamia, for the rest of Sumer, which is the land between the rivers. So, which was also, I guess, the Garden of Eden and many other things. It's the beginning of all things on Earth. Beyond nature. Okay, so the next one is also a map, and it'll give you a better idea. Persian Gulf, Sumer. Now you've got a good idea where it is. Southern Iraq. The next one, if you look at slide number two, you're looking at a aerial view of Ur. And that big bump there is Nanner's house, or ziggurat, or temple, or whatever you want to call it, residence. Okay, as we go along, you're going to see an artifact here from one of the kings. It is the law code given to Ur-Nammu, who was a very important king. And here are laws handed by the gods down to the giant, semi-giant, mixed-breed kings who use that to run the city on behalf of the gods. Now, the same thing would happen in a lesser degree through the high priest. The high priest takes care of the ceremonies and what have you pertaining to the gods. The high priest is also the butler to the god who lives there. So as we go, the first artifact, that is a cuneiform script. It will either be on a rock or on a clay, wet clay, where a stylus pokes the words into the clay. And then it is fired very hot to where it becomes hard as rock. And then, as you see, they last thousands of years. Thousands. Here is a text that is the Lament of Ur. Well, we'll have that text to look at on down the line here. There's the actual artifact. More artifacts, more aerial views, and now you're starting to see the Temple of Ur, which is a ziggurat, huge. It's looks like a hill, and they began to discover it and excavate. Slide 3B is a very good view of the city of Ur, down below, one and two story buildings, and the Temple of Ur, a gigantic building right in the middle. And you can see it's on the river. The Temple of Ur, in that temple lives the god Nanner, the biblical god El, who is Abraham's god. Abraham comes from Ur. Abraham's father, Terah, was actually the high priest of that temple. Now, that can only mean one thing, that Abraham's father was a giant mixed breed demigod, or he's not a high priest. So that will tell you that that is why they married their sister or half-sister, and if they have neither, then they marry their first cousin. If they have none of that, they just don't produce an heir. But by doing that, they produce an heir of the double seed, the same bloodline, and you end up having offspring with the exact same benefits you have, which makes you a semi-giant, you're semi-divine, bigger, stronger, faster, much smarter, and live much longer than the earthlings. Plus, you're placed in positions of authority over the earthlings, and you are the go-between these Nephilim giants. You are the go-between between the god who lives in that temple, in that ziggurat, and the people who live in that city. So you're looking at really three different races of beings. You've got the 15-foot, we'll say, giant Anunnaki gods who came down and built these ziggurat homes to live in. And that goes about every 50 miles, which you can see on the map. You'll find ziggurats there. Anyway, so you're looking at a period where man began, and he literally moved from caveman into that city that you're looking at on Artifact 3B. It's a beautiful photo of the temple and the city. Now, the first 10 generations from Adam down to Noah all married their sister, half-sister, or first cousin. Noah actually married his first cousin because he had neither sisters. So that is how your offspring is guaranteed to have all the benefits you have. And you keep the bloodline of the gods going and going and going as long as you can. So with that, of course, comes the authority over mankind and just all kinds of benefits. The high priest literally is seeing the god every day. He's the butler, taking care of whatever Nanner's needs are, as he and his spouse and whomever may be living in that ziggurat. They had children that they raised there. Nanner may have been raised there, I don't know, but he was raised on Earth. Okay, so as we go on down the slideshow here, more aerials of the city of Ur and the Temple of Ur. Now, when you look at the top of that temple, it looks like a pretty good landing place. So if the god is is coming and going via air travel. He's never in danger being near an earthling, a primitive. So there's always this buffer between the gods and the earthlings, and that is the Nephilim, the giant mixbreeds. They're the go-betweens, they're the buffer. Now, occasionally, earthlings will see them coming and going, you know, with their flying machines. And occasionally, there'll be a procession right down Main Street, a celebration of the gods, and the gods just may be in that procession, depending on what year it is. But the old days, the gods walked with their offspring on Earth, and there are many artifacts that'll show you the god, the Nephilim semi-divine king, and the earthling. Three different sizes, three different races of human beings. Okay, as we go on down, by the way, these ziggurats in city, that's all mud brick. That's totally unbelievable. It's not a mountain, it is mud brick. Imagine how much soil that took and how long that took. Now, if you look at, say, artifact 3CA, you would see the temple, Nanner's home, and these long stairways going up to the top of the temple. Those stairways, if you were an earthling, I'm sorry, you're not going to make it up that stairway. Because they didn't invite, or very, very few earthlings, if any, were invited up there. Now, the high priest, semi-divine mixed breed, he walked up that stairway to come inside the temple to get, you know, his position, taking care of the god. Clothes, meals, whatever the god needs. The other that comes up that stairway is the king. And he'll come up and get his instructions and come back down. Now, how many earthlings would dare to come up there? Because you can see that is very easily defended. And if you have alien technology, it's even easier. So, very interesting looking at the original stairway to heaven. And you'll get a better view of that, I hope, in one of these photographs. Let's go on down. If there's a arrow on the right that'll help you move faster through the slideshow, or an arrow on the left, which will reverse, and you can back up a little, as much as you want, you can back up. So, heading right through it, when you come to, say, artifacts 3I, you're looking at the stairway to heaven. And in that stairway, you can see, if you're down at the bottom, you're looking straight up to heaven. That is where it gets its name. And, you know, the god will fly off into the heavens from up there as well. So that's the stairway to get in the vehicle, to fly into the heavens, or just by view, the stairway ascends into the heavens. So there are photographs of that stairway, many of them. Artifact, the first one showing beings, is an ancient scene that was so important, they made this artifact. And this artifact, what it is a rock that has been shaped into a smooth cylinder, about the size of your hand or smaller, maybe half the size of your hand on some of them. So you would have this nice smooth cylinder rock, and on it you would reverse carve a seam. Put the negative on that rock through rock carving. And then you take that and you roll it upon wet clay. And the negative image on the rock will print the positive on the clay, and you now have the first printing press. And what they can show you there is a scene in history that may have been very important, or they wouldn't have gone through the trouble of reverse carving this. And it was something they could send to all the city-states. They could literally get the newspaper out through these artifacts. Now, it's quite possible, and not say every bit probable, that the Earthlings, at the time of this artifact, were not reading or writing. So it's important to have the picture, the artifact. And as you can see, there's a couple girls with hats on. They are goddesses. And then there are a couple Nephilim, and you see them naked. One carrying water or something there, and the other looks like it carrying a lamb, which is dinner. So you have the giant mixed breeds making sure that the bigger giant gods are being taken care of, and the Earthlings are down below. So we'll go through some of these photographs and some of these ancient artifacts. And when you put your cursor there, of course, a brief description will pop up. All right, let's find one interesting. Let's look at 5A, and the other one is 5. So put your cursor on 5, and let's look at 5A. Excuse me. Okay, you're seeing a skinhead Nephilim, semi-divine, semi-giant, standing upon a ziggurat. So what you're looking at there is a high priest who takes care of the god in that ziggurat. Next to him is a god with a weapon. Next to him is another god, a nephew, a brother, holding in his right hand a 50-headed mace. That's what it's called, but obviously it's some alien technology. And his left hand is another weapon, alien technology. Under his foot is the much smaller Earthling, who must have been disloyal and is being crushed by the gods. That's a very interesting artifact. You're seeing an Earthling, and you can get an idea of his size compared to the god. You're seeing the high priest, semi-divine mixed breed, or Nephilim, and you can see the relationship of his heights to the gods. So you've got a small, medium, and large, all existing at the same time, all with different bloodlines. One is just less of another. Those with more of the god's bloodline have more of the advantages. Okay, the next one over, that one is number 5. There are two panels. The top panel, you're looking at a king, a giant, semi-divine king, probably the son of that goddess standing there to the right, and that is Ninsun. Ninsun married a semi-divine and had 3 semi-divine sons who were appointed to kingships. One of those sons is Gilgamesh, which is probably the most famously known of all the ancient kings from Mesopotamia. But anyway, Ur-Nammu, who I am going to show you here in a minute, Gilgamesh and Gudda were her sons that were appointed the kings. And next to that king, of course, is the ziggurat of the gods. So inside that ziggurat lives the alien Anunnaki giants and one semi-divine high priest, and maybe some other priests, and they're still semi-divines, or priestesses, still semi-divines. Now, those priestesses could very easily be there for the pleasure of the gods, and vice versa for the goddesses. The females on Earth, when they came down, they were almost all men. The workload was heavy. Some females came down, and almost every one of them were a descendant of the king. So they're not going to be available to the Anunnaki workers that were stuck doing the works establishing Earth colony. I mean, you're talking about digging canals, tilling the soil, all of these things, tending the sheep and the cows, which you're going to see here shortly. Anyway, that's a very interesting artifact with the king and his mother and the ziggurat. And below that, you're seeing a priestess in the ziggurat. Okay? Taking care of something there. Now, the very next slide is number 37. And what you're seeing here are cattle pens in Ur. There's a text called Nanner's Cattle or something like that. I'll show it to you. And what it will tell you is there were many different types of cows. And when you add them up, they're a million or better in that city of Ur. So what we're talking about, not only is it the metropolis, the trading center, it's the New York of Sumer, but it's also where the cows are. Now, those cows feed a lot of gods, and then later, of course, earthlings and demigods. Okay, so there's a couple artifacts of tending the flocks and tending the cattle pens. Next are just artifacts found in Ur, and there are different characters. The description of who they are will pop up and give you an idea. Very interesting and rare artifact is this round disc with the scene in the middle of the disc. What you're talking about is Sargon the Great's daughter, Enhi Duenna, who is a scribe. And she's Inanna's assistant, very important. So if you ever were on Inanna's page and looking at some of her texts, you'll see Enhi Duenna is playing a very important part. By the way, Sargon was the spouse to Inanna, Inanna being the goddess of love and war. She gets the name goddess of love because every mixed breed king giant that comes along, if he's a powerful king, she marries him, which I'll show you as we go along. So these are artifacts found in Ur. A beautiful artifact is when you get to the standard of Ur and other scenes. That blue is lapis lazuli. It's a favorite of Inanna's. You see that? Those are fantastic scenes. And of course, chariots and the wheel was in Ur. As you can see, the military was using it, and the military didn't mind running over other Earthlings or killing them in war. Ur went to war many times. Kingship changed hands from city-state to city-state to city-state. And each city-state has a different god living there. So you can see power is shared by the gods. That's basically, whether they want to or not, it passes around. You're going to see an artifact of a helmet. Just gorgeous. Gorgeous. And other artifacts, as you go through this, please go through it. It will blow your mind. The story of Abraham and Isaac happens in Ur. God tells Abraham, this is the Torah or the Old Testament. God tells Abraham that he wants him to sacrifice his son. I guess it's some type of loyalty test. Abraham goes, oh, no, no, oh, yes, yes. So he takes his son up to the mountain where the sacrifice altar is, and he gets ready to take his knife and sacrifice him. I guess slit his throat or something. And just as he raises the knife to do so, he is stopped by a voice saying, God saying, Abraham, stop, take a look. There is a ram with his horns stuck in the thicket. Sacrifice that animal instead of your son. And imagine the relief and joy of both the son and the father. People say that story didn't happen. Yes, it did. No, it didn't. When they discovered Ur and they discovered the text that made this maybe totally different than the Torah, but they're the text, thousands of years old, much older than the Old Testament, the books of Moses, much older. So, and of Abraham, much older. So here we are looking at an artifact of the tale of Abraham and Isaac. Now, by the way, Abraham is the father of the three main religions on earth. All three sprouted from underneath his lineage. For instance, he marries his wife, Sarah. Sarah cannot bear a child for some reason. They get frustrated. She says, here, lay with my servant girl. So he does until she gets pregnant and produces a boy. They name the boy Ishmael. And Ishmael grows to be about 10 years old. And man, Abraham's happy. He's got himself an heir. But the problem is, Ishmael is only part, half of, so Abraham has the bloodline of the gods, but the servant girl has none. And when they produce the son, Ishmael, Ishmael has less bloodline from the gods. Anyway, that's what Abraham has for an heir. Until when Sarah reaches 100, I guess they do live longer, are taller, are stronger, easily identified as leaders over the earthlings. I guess so. But anyway, his sister wife, Sarah, gets pregnant at age 100. And they have a son, an heir, and they call him Yitzhak. Or Isaac. Now, what you've got now is a son, a baby, born of the double seed. Abraham and Abraham's sister. Both are descendants of a god and a giant Nephilim. They are giant Nephilim. As you look at the first generations from Adam down to Noah, they're all living 1,000 years or thereabouts. They are giant Nephilim. Earthlings aren't living that long. And then, you know, it starts to dwindle after the flood, the time that man survives. I will show you that as well. All of this information, if you're interested, you will see it here. There is a ton of it. I appreciate you coming. Let's get through this. So you'll see musical instruments. You'll see jewelry, and the jewelry is beautiful. All kinds of things that are just thousands and thousands of artifacts. And you'll also see artifacts of them in sports. I mean, they've got boxing, they've got wrestling, they've got races, all kinds of sports. And they got board games and dice games. We're talking about going from caveman to a pretty damn civilized earthling sitting in this ancient city of Ur. Much older, thousands of years older than Abraham. So as you look at these artifacts, your jaw would drop about a standard weight of measure. If so, whatever we have today, the gods taught it to us or gave it to us. No matter what it is, language, written language, name it. I don't care what you want to call it, name it. The gods taught man how to make it after the man is watching the gods use it themselves. So quite a few artifacts to look at. It's kind of fun to do so. Then we get into the texts about Ur. Oh boy, here we go. And what I would do is I would take, if it's an important text, I would write in green a must read, and then I'd give it a star rating. One is the lowest must read, still a must read. Two is greater, and three is the greatest for must reads. Very rarely, I'll write a must read three times with three stars, trying to emphasize heavily this is a very important text. So, for instance, under Ur, the first three star is the Lament of Urim, which is Ur. You read that text and you're going to find out what it's like to live under nuclear fallout. It's hard to believe, but this is the end of Ur right here. Very, very interesting. The next one is the three star twice, and it is the lament for all of Sumer and Ur. Same type of problem. Very interesting text. The next one is a one-star lamentation for the destruction of Ur. Now, they wouldn't have all these texts if this wasn't a major, major, major event in Mesopotamia. And Ur, like I said, that's the metropolis. That's everything. I need to pause. Please bear with me. So, what you're looking at here is a bunch of laments about Ur and Sumer. All green emphasized must read. That's how it works. That's the ones to look out for. And if it's a three star, just a three star is very important. But when you see two of them or three of them, it doesn't get any more important. Those are the best I have that I can bring to you to show you what happened back then, our actual history. That has much greater detail in it than the way the Book of Torah, just Moses' books, just covered a large amount of time and nothing flat. If you go through the first 10 generations, thousands of years they lived, 8,000 years, and it's only worth a couple sentences in the book. Well, here you're going to find a lot more than a couple sentences. So there are texts about Ur. Then there are texts that are just simply a king's list. Man, oh man, the Sumerian king's list is a must read. It is a must, a must. And what you're going to see is an artifact that lists all the kings, including the kings prior to the flood. Who do you think wrote that artifact? This is an important artifact. You'll see it when you click on the text, and you'll get to read the text. And hold on, because it's going to be hard to swallow. Okay, next is a little quote from Genesis 6 out of the Bible. And again, the teal represents the Nephilim mixed breeds, semi-giant, semi-divine. The blue, are the gods. And they're, of course, the Anunnaki who came down and colonized the earth. Okay, the first light show of a king is Ur-Nammu. And I'll tell you there, this is what they say he ruled from. There are other things you might look at. The king's list that I told you about, and you'll see probably a much better detail of how long Ur-Nammu reigned. Now, he's two-thirds divine. His father is a giant semi-divine Nephilim, and his mother is a goddess. This son of Ninsun is very important, and therefore he becomes one, the main king of Ur, if not one of the top main kings of Ur. And Ur, of course, is that very important city. Now, here comes the artifacts. If you hit refresh, you'll get that slideshow to start from the beginning, which is better if you do. So the beginning of Ur-Nammu's slideshow is a couple busts of him, but one of them, and I'm surprised I can't stop this, 2M. 2M is an artifact that is well worth studying. You can see a giant king right in the middle of that artifact, if you can make this slideshow stop. Right in the middle of that artifact is Ur-Nammu, and damaged is seated a giant Anunnaki god. Above Ur-Nammu is the symbol of the god who lives in Ur. That's his symbol. Down below is a panel that has that king, that giant mixed breed, son of the goddess Ninsun, and Nanner's spouse, Ningal. So now you have a god, his goddess wife, and Nephilim. And so go these artifacts. Now, if you've got the time, I would study them. The artifacts of Ur-Nammu with the skinhead and carrying a basket on top of his head. Here, he is a high priest. The high priest is basically living in the temple. And the god doesn't want any diseases or any lice or anything coming from the city into his ziggurat. Therefore, the high priest is almost always a skinhead. Okay? The king does not have to be, but the high priest is almost always. Now, in the beginning, they were both skinheads. A good example of what's going on here is Artifact 1A. You have the god Nanner. On the left, in the middle, is the Nephilim king, Ur-Nammu, or Ur-Nama. And behind is the earthling carrying the water. He's the cupbearer. And he's probably the high priest or something, you know. But he's the skinhead. And notice the beard on the king, identical to the beard on the god. Notice the hat on the king versus the crown of animal horns on the god. That crown of animal horns depicts that he is a descendant of the king Anu from their planet. He's a direct descendant, one of the main ones, and therefore he's wearing the royal crown of their bloodline, who rule the planet Nibiru, where they come from. They came down, settled a colony called Earth, and this is how man began, right there in Mesopotamia. And these are the artifacts and texts that will pertain. And this one, this slideshow, is strictly about Ur-Nammu. Neat artifacts. And again, you're going to see the giant god much bigger than Ur-Nammu, who's much bigger than Earthlings. Okay, under the slideshow, you're going to see Ur-Nammu's text. And the first one that's got two stars on it is a Tigi to Enlil for Ur-Nammu. Enlil runs Earth Colony. He's the heir to the king and in charge of setting up Earth Colony and in charge of seeing it running smoothly. To set up Earth Colony, they set up a way station on Mars. Earth Colony between the rivers, they would establish the civilization that they would need to feed themselves, clothe themselves, shelter themselves, and so on. But down south in South Africa, a group of 300 or so are doing the mining. There's a group of 300 or so in the garden between the rivers. And there's a group of 300 or so stationed on Mars and or trekking goods from Earth to Mars, stored in the warehouses until the planet Nibiru comes through our solar system. It takes 3,600 of our years for their planet to have one orbit around our sun. Therefore, they age 1 year while we age 3,600. To us, they're totally immortal. And when you add the clock of 1 to 3,600, and you mix that, you come up with a demigod that might live thousands of years, in which you will see. Anyway, Ur-Nammu gives you perhaps the short terms of his reign, but this is what I'll give you on that. And you can go to Wikipedia and see what they have to say about it. And I got a direct link there for you. So here comes the green stars, all right? Ur-Nammu, the canal digger. We're talking about irrigation for the farms here. We may also be talking about docking the boats that they run goods and beings. The gods travel up and down the rivers. Supplies travel up and down the rivers. Okay? Which is why they're on the river for water. Water is very important to any civilization. and there is the first one. Free's Poems of Ernamu. Well, that's a 3-star. I'm trying to tell you, that's probably the best one on Ernamu. And then it goes on down. There are many texts. I read every one of these many times. It just depends how much you want to grasp of this, but it's all here, and it does fit together perfectly. There's no missing link anywhere of a million years of evolution. Just, it is missing. And man, all of a sudden, goes from caveman, Neanderthal, into Homo sapien. Living in a city with schools and medicine and clothes making and farming. And, I mean, sophisticated stuff going on in the cities. Okay, the next king, as you come down after Ernamu, is his son, Shulgi. And Shulgi, that makes him the grandson to the goddess and to the giant mixed breed. Lugalbanda, by the way, he was king for 1,000 years. So it just depends whose clock you want to talk about. The so-called experts just don't get it through their head that anyone could live that long. I'm showing you the truth of the matter by using simply the artifacts and their own lists. So we'll go through this. Shulgi, he too is a high priest and a king. And you see a statue of him. You also see him carrying the grain upon his head. Everybody has their responsibilities, including the king. A very interesting artifact coming up is artifact 5. Here you see his grandmother, Nunsun, who is a giant, with her hands up in praise. You see Shulgi in the middle, and you see a god right before him. So the god is Nergal, who is the god of the underworld, the netherworld, Hades, whatever you want to call it. Later, his name was Hades, but his name is Ergal. He is married to Ereshkigal, who is the queen of the underworld. Some say that they have seen a hole in the North Pole, which seems to be true. And they went into that hole. They were pulled into, their plane was gently pulled into the hole, and they got to see a pyramid in there, a ziggurat. Again, it's the Anunnaki gods who came down. Some are underground, some are on the Mars, some are in the mines, some are tilling the fields and raising the cows and the chickens and the sheep. You get the idea. Making clothes, making wine, oh, and very importantly, making beer. Very important. But on these artifacts, it's easy to tell who's the semi-divine and who's the god. One has no hat whatsoever and pretty much skinhead, and the other one's got the royal Anunnaki bloodline crown of horns. And then there are beasts that, of course, are symbols of gods and so forth. But time and again, you're looking at Shulgi in these ancient artifacts that, what are we talking about, 4,000 years old? 3,000 years old? These artifacts, as you can see, some are etched on a mace. Some are carved into a mountainside. Some are reverse carved on a cylinder, the cylinder seal rolled onto clay. Some of the texts are definitely, although there are texts that are carved into the mountainside as well, which is, by the way, how they learned how to translate cuneiform. They found it with other languages on a mountainside. So here sits Nanner, and here sits Sholji. Now, a one that shows pretty much everything is slide number 10. Slide number 10, I suggest you look at it. On the left is the cylinder seal that I was just talking about. It's reverse carved, so you got the negative seam there. Do you think ancient man could, number one, take that rock and turn it into that cylinder seal smooth as a whistle? And do you think he can reverse carve? Take a look on the right. There is the scene rolled onto the clay. You've got the positive image on the clay, the negative image in the cylinder seal. Now, let's look at the clay image. What this is a scene in our history that was so important, it needed to be recorded for all time. And how they did that is you can see right there in that little cylinder seal. That seal lasts for thousands and thousands of years, and these clay tablets do the same. That seal can print many, many of these clay tablets. And they, of course, can be handed out to all the city-states, and they're all aware of this scene. And the scene is, starting from the left, you're looking at Mother Goddess Ninsun with her hands and prayer and praise and all this other stuff, pushing the idea that he should be king. Next is a little bit taller, but it's her son, Sholji. Now that's a Nephilim that is appointed to kingship. Not only that, he is grabbed by the wrist and escorted by Inanna to Inanna's father, Nanner, who is in charge of her. So you have the god Nanner. The Bible would call him El at the time of Abraham. Anyway, Nanner, living in the ziggurat, sitting on his throne, is presented by his daughter, Inanna, a Nephilim that she wishes to espouse. Well, she espoused every important king throughout history and therefore was given the nickname of Goddess of Love. She did it because she had sex with everybody of importance, god or mixed breed. And she was quite a character, so you can go to her page and see quite many, many artifacts on Inanna. Some will shock you, so I truly suggest you go all the way down her page when you go there. Anyway, you've got the mother, you've got the son, semi-divine, you've got the daughter to the god living there who appoints the kings. So here's Nanner, the god who is the patron of that city-state, and he's going to appoint this king, this son to Ninsun, a kingship in her. And she's going to espouse him. That's what that scene is. Now, behind Nanner is a text. I have no idea what that says. I wish I did. I do not read cuneiform. Anyway, you can see how detailed that reverse carving is to get the beard right, the hat right, the face right, the dress, the text. There's a lot there on that little bitty cylinder seal. And the artifact adjacent is Shulgi as a high priest and Shulgi as a king. There's, and again, spouse to Inanna, brought to Nanner, and son to goddess Nensun. So he's walking with the gods all the time. And we'll go through some of his artifacts. Not a whole lot, but Shulgi was written about quite a bit. As we go down to the text, you'll see many of them about Shulgi. Here's a two-star, a dead the Enlil for Shulgi. Here's a two-star, Shulgi and Enlil's barge. Shulgi was taking care of the gods. One star, a dead to Utu, a three star twice. So here's the best information you're going to find on Shulgi is a bunch of praise poems. The conglomerate of them all will give you more information than any other that I have, any other translation that I have to offer here. And I'm offering everything I can find. Next is Amir Sin. No artifacts to show you of him, regrettably, but here are some texts. A one with one star, Amir Sin. And who he is, I let you know. He's the great grandson of Nensun. You see how these Nephilim are keeping her bloodline alive as they pass it down the line to their heirs. Just another heir. And they're all can be tracing their bloodline straight back to the king Anu, who is king of all the Anunnaki on planet Nibiru. So you could truly say that Amir Sin is a descendant of God in heaven. He must be a semi-divine. And he definitely will not answer to earthlings. Earthlings answer to him. Okay, next one is Shu Shen. I have two items to look at. Actually, the same item. A black and white and the actual artifact. That artifact is a reverse carving. Take a look at that. Look at the detail. No earthling could do that at the time of Shu Shen. Shu Shen, by the way, of course, Inanna espouses him and Amir Sin and all of them. All the main semi-divine kings, she makes sure she espouses, especially the ones that are king of her father's city-state, Ur. So you're looking at a tremendous reverse carving on a little bitty round rock, a cylinder seal that is smooth. Take a look at the background. It's all smooth. And look at the detail. Thousands and thousands of years old. What are we talking, 3,000 years here, 4,000? Yeah. So you're getting a look at history that you don't get in any history books. And you get an explanation visibly and through text of just who the Nephilim were. It tells you straight up the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and in the days after. go to Genesis 6. Genesis 6 is what this website is all about. The sons of God who came down had sex with the daughters of men and had children by them. The children they had became the heroes of old, men of renown, the Nephilim, the semi-giant, semi-divine, appointed to kingship and high priest, positions of middleman between the gods and earthlings. It keeps everything safe that way. Don't have to kill a bunch of earthlings that are supposed to be loyal to you that way. Anyway, here's Shushan's text. There's a one star and a one star. Then we go to Ibisen and who he is. And again, he's teal. That means he has a bloodline from the gods. And he has benefits from that. And I guess he's walking with them, talking with them. Occasionally, one of them, like Ur-Nammu, might eat with them. Okay, then we go to a slideshow where there's just a whole bunch of artifacts of the same thing where Inanna's bringing the Nephilim before her father or before her mother, and Nen-Sun might be in the scene, she might not. But every one of these scenes were so important that they went through the tremendous effort to create a cylinder disc so smooth and then reverse carve it. And it took many years before man was taught to do this. And when you look at his artifacts, they look nothing like the detail you find on the original ones fashioned by the gods. And there are tens of thousands of these discovered in all these different city-states, as well as texts. Many, many texts. Pardon me. I'm pausing. I'm sorry. Thanks for hanging with me. So as you go through the unidentified, which king it is, and the alien giant gods, I can pretty much tell you who they are. But the kings, I could not. So you get a look at many varieties of artifacts where things are carved, either directly or negatively onto a cylinder seal. Lots, let's go back here. If you can, please find artifact number 8. A tremendous detail reverse carve. And I'd like to explain a little bit here. When you get there, you'll see 4 figures. The first figure is the semi-divine, semi-giant, made king. Okay? The second one is a Anunnaki god, tell by his hat, standing upon a winged beast. That winged beast is Ninurta's storm bird. What that is trying to depict is Ninurta's flying machine that is well armed for battle. That's what you see there. That is the storm bird, which was a name for a flying disc. The next is a very tall Anunnaki god named Nanner. And you can find Nanner. Here you have the moon crescent above his head. A sure symbol of Nanner. And that's what it's telling you. This is Nanner. Okay? Now, you'll see that moon crescent symbol used heavily today in Islam, which I forgot to tell you. So Abraham is the father of the three religions under Islam. Ishmael is told to leave the settlement. And even though he's the oldest son, he's not of the double seed. He's born of Abraham and the servant girl. So he and the servant girl's mother are sent away by Abraham's wife and sister, who just had a child they called Isaac or Isaac. Now, and I told you about the event in Ur with Isaac being sacrificed and then saved. All these things right here in artifact form pretty much proves that they happened. Why would you go through all that to tell a lie when you're recording history? Carefully recording it so that man can someday read it, look at it, and understand what it is. That day is today, and you're here to do just that. And I appreciate you coming. So as we go through these, you'll see some very old ones that are did not wear well, and you'll see others that look pretty that look brand new. It's just incredible the detail that was on the original carvings. Incredible. And it's also totally incredible that they lasted for thousands and thousands of years. They're now available on this website. Many of these artifacts have now been destroyed somewhat recently. When ISIS was, radical Islam was trying to put together the caliphate, and ISIS went around through the Middle East destroying every ancient artifact of the gods and giant kings that they can find. They went through the museums, for instance, the museum in Egypt, just destroyed. Imagine. All these artifacts that every one they could find, we're talking thousands, they destroyed. Some of them small, some of them life-size statues of the gods. Some of them were blown up from the side of the mountain. They used dynamite to blow them up. Beautiful artifacts, which I happen to have pictures of, so they still live here on my website. But there are beautiful artifacts of earthlings, then the giant king, and then the much bigger giant god and his flying saucer above the king. Go to the winged gods, you'll see. Just keep looking. I appreciate you coming to this website. Keep looking. Keep coming back if you can. Try to absorb as many pictures and as many starred texts you can. They're not that long. A couple of them are long, and most of them are very short. Very short. But if they hold some quick information you can pick up about the topic on the page or the subject on the page, I'm just trying to save you time so that you can understand this as fast as you can absorb it. And if you reject it, don't feel bad. Reject it. Most of the world does. This has been hidden for at least 2,500 years. No one wants you to see this now. No government, no religion, no secret society. None of them want you to be aware of these. They are. They just don't want you aware of it. You're afraid you might freak out if you knew the truth about who you were and all the lies they have told you. You might not like them anymore. They did a study, NATO did a study on this very subject, what would happen if we told the truth about aliens. And this was in 1961. And five of the main nations in NATO each took different subjects. They studied the subject, submitted their findings to NATO headquarters in Paris. There happened to be a gentleman who became in charge of these studies at the headquarters of NATO. He saw them, he read them, and he says, because I saw him speak one time, he says that all of these things I'm sorry, I just got distracted. I'm just going to tell you how I appreciate all of these subjects means the collapse. It means the collapse of society, of the economy, of the religion, of medicine, of this, of that, of schools. Everything collapses because people find out we've been lied to. And we won't like it. And we might not like what this tells you. I suggest they could have wiped us out any time they want. Instead, they fashioned us. We're theirs. They're watching over us. They always have. You wouldn't have texts. You wouldn't have historical documents or artifacts, and you sure wouldn't have law codes and biblical codes, the Bible and so forth, the Torah. You wouldn't have these things, or the Quran. None of them would exist if not for Abraham. Because the Jews through Isaac, the Arabs and Islam down through Ishmael, and the Christians spin off of the Jews through Jesus, all under Abraham, all under a Nephilim giant who had the bloodline of the gods. Okay, well, let me thank you once again for taking the time to listen to this, to look at this, and I hope I helped you in some way. I hope this helped you. Nothing like a video, an audio, or something to read. I try to offer all three to you. I'm just glad you came. Please come back. Thank you.